Hello, everyone, and welcome to the format Cheeksy Chats in our Cheeks Talks podcast from our ethical pleasure platform, Cheeks. With a big thanks, we sadly have to say goodbye to our former host, Pauline, as we start into a new era of this podcast.
What's new? The language, the format, the hosts, and much more. We are Helen and Ameza, good friends since meeting at a pool party 3 years ago. We decided to take our friendship to the next level with starting this podcast. A little bit about ourselves. My name is Ameza. I'm a multidisciplinary digital artist specializing in 3D design. I'm really passionate about exploring how art and societal norms influence perceptions, and I believe how diverse representation can contribute to personal, sexual, and societal liberation.
And I'm Helen. I've been working at Cheeks for a couple of years now, focusing mostly on content and communication areas. I've assisted a couple of the Cheeks porn productions, and I'm really fascinated with the diverse portrayal of sexuality and the narratives around intimacy, pleasure, and love. And I'm currently studying gender and sexuality in global politics as a master's.
Yes, chatting freely about diverse topics connected to sex and relationships has been one of our favorite pastimes, and we would love to invite you to join our conversation by listening, feedbacking, and starting a conversation yourself with friends and partners.
We strongly believe in the power of communication, and with this podcast, we'd like to reduce the fear, shame, embarrassment, and discomfort around the topic of sex that our society has taught us to feel.
In our pilot episode, we dive straight into a taboo topic. We're talking about anal sex. We talk about various myths, fears, and facts around the topic. We include the history of anal sex, homophobia, tips, and techniques. And if you got curious, join our little community and listen to the very first episode of Cheeksy Chats. Hello and welcome to Cheeksy Chats.
It's our sexual wellness podcast from the platform Cheeks, and your new hosts, Helen and
Ameza,
will be talking about sexual inspirations, fantasies, and deconstructing different taboos. Today's topic is
A for anal.
And we are going to chat about all different types of things. We have also asked you what you guys want to know about anal, and we will talk about a bunch of myths, about kind of the history, where these come from, and hopefully answer most of your questions. But also, we have on Cheeks a whole masterclass on anal sex. So if you want to go deeper or want like a step-by-step to get you into the material or for you to try out things, we can really recommend it. If you use the code CHEEKSYCHATS, you can get a 7-day free trial and try it out. The code and the link are in the bio. And now we hope you enjoy our little overview of anal sex.
Yes.
Okay, should we start with some definitions?
Yes. We'd like to get into some definitions for anal play and anal sex. We also wanted to differentiate between the two because anal play doesn't need to be penetrative. You can also just play around, which can work in different ways, like using sex toys, fingers. It doesn't have to get into the butt. You can also just play around there. And yeah, there are different activities like fingering, fisting, rimming, which is like basically using your tongue to lick or stick it inside. Of course, also penetration with a toy or a penis.
And then there's this very general top and bottom terminology we hear a lot, especially when it comes to anal. And sort of the top is the person who is inserting. Yeah. It may be a penis, it may be a toy, it may be a finger or a tongue. And the bottom is the person who is receiving sort of.
And then there's also the versatile role, which basically means that you can take on both, like their insertion or receptive role.
Doing it all.
Yeah, being flexible.
Loving
it. Yeah, and as anal is still a topic that is very taboo or a bit shameful in general society, there are lots of myths and mysteries about it, kind of. And we want to use this podcast to also clear up some misconceptions and, as we already said, answer some questions later.
And the first kind of one of the biggest myths or misconceptions about anal play is that it's dirty.
Yeah, that because it's a butt, you basically paint on somebody? And clearly the answer is no, not necessarily. It doesn't have to be. It basically depends on lots of factors like your diet, how you prepare, and yeah.
Yeah, I think that because sort of the function of it is to kind of excrete fecal matter, a lot of people are a bit shy about it or kind of feel that it is an even bigger taboo than other things because you're kind of inserting something into a place where usually things are only coming out. But you can prepare so that this doesn't happen. And even if it does happen, it's not a bad thing.
Yes.
I think that's the most important thing, to kind of be realize that it's a human process to excrete things through your anus and that it's totally fine. And you just have to communicate about it and see if you feel happy with it or if there are any sort of underlying issues that you or your partners may have with this and how you guys want to tackle them. But there's also, of course, some people who have like a kink for anal because of this.
Yeah, it can be like a thing that actually adds to the enjoyment.
Yeah, also because it has kind of this then humiliating factor that if both parties agree upon it, can be super fun. So you don't have to completely say it isn't dirty at all if it turns you on that it's a bit dirty. So you can go either way. You can either lean into it with your partners if it's something that both of you or all of you find fun, or you can kind of step away from it and talk about what worries you have and how you guys want to go about them.
And totally, if, like you said before, if there is some dirt or like some residue of whatever, there shouldn't be any shame, and you should do it with a person or people that are definitely fine with it. Because after all, it's about stuff can happen, and it doesn't matter how much you prepare for that, it can always happen. And you should be in a space where that's totally fine.
I think that's super interesting because it also goes along with one study where it says that it's perceived as like one of the most intimate practices because it is kind of this very sensitive place. So it also, maybe not if you're doing it for the first time, the idea to try it with a one-night stand, but it might be easier to try it out with someone you know, which also kind of leads into this whole myth that it hurts.
Yes, that anal sex hurts, especially for the first times or like always, which it usually shouldn't. Like, of course, there's some preparations and measures that you have to take on, so it doesn't hurt. But usually if it hurts, it's a sign that you may be doing something wrong. So as with the first point, you have to properly prepare, which means like stretching, like with foreplay, fingers, some toys maybe. Also relaxation is very important because I would say natural reaction is to like tense up. You're vulnerable. It's maybe nerve-wracking if it's your first time. But that's a bit counterintuitive because it's a muscle and you have to relax it for it to like be receptive.
And in that, there's also this big point that the anus doesn't self-lubricate.
Yes.
So it is super important to lubricate it because otherwise it will not work.
Yes, there will be lots of friction. You will like burn and be in pain probably. For anal, like the more the better, just more lube. When in doubt, just put more. Spit also works, but lube is the best. Yeah.
The type of lube also depends a bit on what type you're doing, right? Because if you're doing it with a penis, then silicone lube is the one that everyone is raving about. Mm-hmm. But for silicone-based toys, then you use water-based lube.
And I think in general, it's also important to note that on some days, you might be more tight. You might need more preparation, even if you're a pro. And it's fine to like take a step back and put more time into like preparing. I think for beginners, it's also very helpful to maybe start with masturbation, like fingering yourself or using toys. And it doesn't have to be like with another person, your first experiences.
I think that's a really good point. I've never really thought about this because it's always drawn as such a two people at least based thing. But yeah, of course, you can also have some fun times on your own with a little butt plug and yeah, get into it.
Yeah.
Because then I guess also this stress of
yeah,
why is it not working kind of goes yeah. away a bit if you've kind of been training with yourself and are a bit more patient than if you're kind of like presenting yourself to
yes.
someone else.
The first time, like also I think the anxiety goes away mm-hmm. a bit. Like if there's some fecal matter coming out, it's of course less embarrassing if it's just you. And you can also get to know your body in that way and maybe test your limits or like see, okay, now I feel that something's coming. And then in a two-partner scenario, you can better estimate your boundaries.
Makes so much sense. Yeah, masturbation, always a great one.
Yeah, yeah. Masturbation, preparation, and relax while it's happening.
Yeah.
Deep breaths.
And something else that can stop it from hurting are kind of different positions, right?
Yeah.
Because some positions, there you as the receiving end also have more control over how deep it goes or mm-hmm. how fast it is. And I think that a lot of people start with sort of spooning because there you're kind of laying in front of the person who is inserting. Mm-hmm. Then you can slowly sort of start with your breathing and also control how much is happening. And it's also a position where kind of your pelvic floor and sphincter can relax quite well.
Yeah.
And what I've also read is that as the person who is doing it, especially if they have a penis, the movement also kind of goes from your pelvic region and not the whole body is like
yeah.
hopping in on it.
You got to have some rhythm to it, not just like wiggle around and hammer it home.
It's a dance. It's a yes, dance, it's not a pounding. Yeah.
And it's also a marathon and not a sprint in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like, you finger it a bit and then like go for it. It's still like feeling your way mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. and like testing with your partner. I think what can also help a lot is some distractions in that way. Like if it's the first time for the partner, if you like caress them or like in different sensitive areas, make them feel good. It can also help relax them in general, which then helps to relax like your sphincter muscle and stuff like that. Yeah.
You're cute. And of course, as with everything, the rule is always talk about it. Communicate also during, if something is hurting, adjust a bit, then don't go as deep or try different things because really it shouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
In general, like if it hurts a bit at the beginning while you're getting into it, then you know to not then go further. So if one finger hurts, don't suddenly insert a whole dildo. Go
yeah.
slow. It should be a slow way of kind of getting to a part where nothing hurts, ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's usual or like normal that there's some discomfort maybe first, but pain is always a bad sign, I would say.
Unless and you're into it.
Unless you're into it, right.
Then go
for it. Go
but
for
if you're
pain.
Not into it, it doesn't have to be there.
Yeah. And you don't need to pressure yourself if you notice like, okay, we've been trying for a couple hours and it's not working and actually I'm not feeling it, then stop. Maybe it's not for you or maybe not today.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think also bodies are just different. And
yeah.
some people take a lot less time to kind of feel comfortable and for it to be fine. And other people might not, especially if it's new. And that's also fine. You don't have to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Our next myth is that anal play is very often associated with being something that people in the LGBTQIA community mm-hmm. do, or specifically people who are gay.
Yeah, and that's a very weird myth because like sexual acts are not tied to sexuality. Like I know that there are straight men who are like, oh, I'm into butt stuff. What does that mean for my sexuality? And it doesn't have to mean anything. It's just a body. It's not like your sexuality and it doesn't tie down to that strictly in any way.
But I've heard this before too in kind of like homophobic ways where people yeah. are like, no, I can't receive because it makes me weak or it's like a gay thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this kind of shows the super interesting perception of masculinity
yeah.
and sex that you always have to be the one penetrating and giving and can't be the one who is receiving it through like a dildo or fingers or being pegged is the term. Yeah. Because sort of I think what's interesting about pegging is that this notion of masculinity in heterosexual relationships kind of puts you on a different level and takes away this like receiving, giving the way it is normally. It kind of flips around the roles. And I find it super interesting that cis men are intimidated by this.
Yes. And I think it also mirrors somehow how like sexuality or like the roles in the bedroom also enforce this hierarchy. Like the male has to do the action, I would say, like now, like the penetration. They can't like receive, they have to take lead. And that's such a like antiquated position and so sad that it's so shameful in a way.
Especially because it is so, it can be so pleasurable to do it for people with prostate. The prostate is a very sensitive area. Yeah. So it is really a lot of fun you could be missing out on because of some sort of, role imagery that is really only limiting.
Totally. But it seems like to many cis men or like people that are afraid of it in these roles that they almost feel like, okay, after I did this, there's no going back. Like all my other, let's say, privileges are going to get taken away because I took on this female act or this female behavior and I enjoyed it actually.
But not that many men have been in the passive role that are in heterosexual relationships. So from cis men, every 36th heterosexual cis man has done it at some point in their life. And if you look at, for instance, in the last month, 2 out of 1,500 heterosexual men have done it, according to a study in the US, which is very, very little compared to homosexual cis men, where 90% have been at some point in a receiving position. And in the last month, a third have been in a receiving position. Yeah. And bisexual cis men kind of lie in between, but a lot closer to the homosexual men. So this is sort of a very stark contrast, especially because in the same study, it was also shown that as the giving part, every third hetero man had a form of anal sex where they are penetrating. So yeah, from every third to every 36th is a big gap.
Still. Yeah, a big gap. But I think it's also worth mentioning at this point that also in gay relationships, anal sex is not a given, or it's not like that every gay couple does it. Because I think it's such a mirror to like the normal vaginal penetration that people sort of project that onto gay relationships. And also with that, the heteronormative roles, like the top is like the man, the bottom is the woman, and to like project that on there or like to expect all gay couples to work like that is also a very gross simplification in a way.
For sure. And also interestingly, a lot of like homophobic commentary is also always only based on the receiving end and never on the giving end. So this whole concept of like being weaker because you are receiving really plays into that and is kind of super restrictive. And we really hope for all the cis hetero men out there that you can kind of step away from this and just, if you want to try it, just try it. It can really be a blast.
Let go of the shackles of misogyny, please.
Just do it. There's a great world out there for you. And also, a grouping that is oftentimes overlooked is, of course, also lesbian relationships. But they're also, it is not uncommon that with strap-ons or with fingering, anal play is a part, not as much as vaginal play or oral play, but it also definitely is established in the sapphic community.
Everybody's enjoying it.
Yes, you can too.
But you don't have to.
You also really don't have to if you don't want to.
Another myth is that anal play will stretch you out. Which is wrong. Like, the tissue down there is very elastic, and the anal sphincter muscles are so tightly toned that unless receiving very big things or larger than life toys, this shouldn't be a problem.
I find it interesting because a lot of the reason why people want to try anal in the sort of het community is because they think it's tighter, right? This whole tightness thing is always such a big topic with everything. Everyone just wants it tight all the time.
And destroy the tightness.
Yeah. Mm. And then is upset when it's no longer tight, which is also not even true. It doesn't actually happen, but it's such a thing.
You don't have that power to destroy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really... The body is stronger than you. So yeah, please do remember that it will not stretch out. And yes, tightness can be fun, but it's not the only important thing when engaging in sex.
Yeah. Of course, there are like some scenarios where your anus will stretch out. Like if you, for instance, get into fisting or some really big toys. And for some people, this is the pleasure in it. Like they like being... this loose hole or whatever, and it doesn't have to be a bad thing. But a regular penis won't do that, so don't worry. And also, not your fingers.
And then, as we mentioned earlier, that people that have a prostate, for them, it's sort of the super, super erogenous zone, especially when you, like, touch it, that it can lead to a whole different type of orgasm. Mm,
yeah.
But it's... is also possible for people without a prostate to enjoy.
Yeah, because lots of people are wondering if like anal sex or anal play is even enjoyable for people without prostates. And it's a sexual activity that can lead to lots of pleasure because even people with vaginas can experience internal clitoral stimulation from anal play.
For sure. And I think there's also just a bunch of nerve endings at the anus. So if you even, you don't even have to penetrate it. If you lick it or massage it or something, it is already very, very fun. And also it feels a bit different than other erogenous zones.
Totally,
so it is a very specific type of pleasure that can be very fun.
So just play around.
Yeah, and see what works for you.
Circle around the anus. It doesn't have to get in there. Can it already be like exciting? Just... exploring.
Yeah, for sure. A big myth about anal sex is that you don't need to use a condom because you cannot get pregnant through anal sex, and it is harder to get sexually transmitted infections from it. At this point, we would like to really tell everyone to be cautious because while you might not get pregnant, this is very, very unlikely.
But I mean, there can be some spillage, right?
Yeah, there could always be some spillage. But the main reason why you should be wearing a condom is because it is easier to transmit STIs through anal sex. Yeah.
The anus is very, like, sensitive in that way. It lacks natural lubrication, as we said before, and anal sex can lead to some tissue tears. Usually they're not that bad, but because it's something that's open in there, it can, like, heighten your risk of infection. And so it's better to just wrap it up and wear a condom.
Yeah, I think also, especially after the whole HIV and AIDS epidemic, where it was then found that this is often caused through this type of rippage, it is super important, even though there's a lot of better ways to treat it now, and it is no longer a death sentence necessarily, and you can live with it for a very long time. Generally, avoiding STIs is always... not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Can always be helpful. So, yeah, we would really like to remind everyone to wear a condom and be safe out there.
Yeah. Of course, with more lubrication, you can also try to avoid more of those tears. But still, it's better to be safe. And especially on the type, on the side of the bottom, because it's much higher to get STIs or like infections. I think in nowadays society, there's still some like more conservative opinions that anal sex is weird or like this thing of today where these sexual freaks are trying whatever and it's like abnormal. But actually, and proof that has been part of our history in forever.
For sure. I think, yeah, this whole depiction of it being like abnormal and dirty lies on the one hand, of course, because of where it's placed and because of what the anus does. But on the other hand, it is super deeply ingrained with the Christian belief system and then colonialism in part of that as a way of spreading it. So originally, it can be found all throughout history in artifacts, and especially in Peru, there was like a whole phase, like 300 AD, where there's a bunch of pots where 31% depicted anal sex, so a lot more than any other sexual act. And also in China and Japan in between the 16th and 19th century, there was a lot of displaying anal sex also as a practice between heterosexual people. In France also. So all over we can find it. There's also, I did this in uni once, this type of very sexually charged sort of short stories that are called fablio, and there it's about like very intense sex practices, so it's always a storyline, and the sex kind of stands for some sort of power relationship and stuff, and anal is also used within it. So it has always existed, people have always been doing it, experiencing it, and the reason why it is so taboo kind of lies in the fact that during the Middle Ages, not even technically in the Bible, but one of the papers relating to it, the seven deadly sins were kind of written out, and it is kind of seen as a part of sodomy, which is not allowed according to this Christian belief. And this led to laws banning this act, and then also when colonizing, bringing these values into the colonies and making sure that it is punishable, which has had a lot of long time effects and issues still for people living in parts of the world that were former colonies, and also generally in a lot of Christian parts of the world, it is still seen as sort of a taboo, which is ironic because I think I also had a class on this in uni. I think
university sounds like fun.
Yeah, there was a lot of juicy things going on. That gay sex is seen as like not okay, according to some interpretations of it, but also generally in this part about the anal sex, anal sex was one of the things you're not allowed to do. So it said you basically have to be married to have sex. Mm-hmm. You have to have it in missionary position, and you should be having it only with one person or something like this. So technically every single other act would already be wrong according to Christian rules.
So very restrictive, very like...
Yeah, not sex positive at all. Yeah. And then it's, again, interesting that this anal was picked out as like the practice to be super ashamed of. But I guess it's just the one that's most deeply ingrained and most lasting, because shame around sexuality is a super, super big thing. And I think also, as mentioned before, then this emergence of HIV and AIDS in the 80s kind of also made it look like it is an unsafe practice, and a lot of people were scared to practice it. So this is sort of a whole long history with anal where people are very unsure about it, even though it's always being practiced.
It's very understandable that it's such a unsafe practice if you always like demonize it or vilify it and make it into such a shameful topic, because then people don't know the proper ways to engage in anal play or anal sex, and then stuff like that happens, that you do it in unsafe ways and crises like these and tragedies like these on these large scales will happen through this like purity culture or whatever you want to call it. And I think looking at history in general, it's interesting how circular it almost seems, like that anal sex is practiced, or like even normalized in some way, and then it's getting restricted, and then it's normalized again, and it's like seems like this circular motion almost.
Which I guess is also why you can see sort of practicing anal as kind of moving away from societal expectations and kind of finding your own way, because it breaks sort of with the rules that are set for you, which is also might be a fun reason to kind of try it out, to be like, okay, what is all this fuss about?
Yeah.
Let me see and actually find my pleasure in something that isn't necessarily accepted, and that's okay too.
Yeah. But in a way, it's crazy that, like, having done the research, that we see that it has been done like in 23,000 BCE by the Babylonians. And even now today, it's sort of like shameful and frowned upon, that we still are in some ways in the same place.
For sure. And I think at the same time, it also shows the importance free sexuality has for kind of a more free and liberated society, and how condemning sexual practices sort of limits your sexual liberation, and in that reinforces misogyny, yeah, or homophobia and so on and so forth. So really questioning where this feeling you have about things like anal comes from. Because if it's just a personal disgust, for instance, with like fecal matter or something, that's like one thing. And then if this is not something you want to personally try, or you don't like the idea of being penetrated anally, that's your personal way of going about it. But if it sort of is this deeply ingrained view that you are then dirty or it's wrong, I think it is super important to question, okay, why do I feel this way? And to realize that it really is part of a structural enforcement of doing things, and also to encourage only heterosexual acts.
Yeah, like maximizing these personal preferences, I minimize that now, also puts a lot of marginalized people or groups on the fringes of society, especially what we talked about before, that if you like link anal sex to gay people or something that's disgusting or dirty to like a specific group, it's so easy to like target them as a group, or like be like, oh, the other, they're so dirty and so despicable in a way. So I think these sexual secret almost, or like acts that are not public, are so like projected on groups, and it's crazy how that is used to control us, but also like the society as a whole.
I think that's a really good point, because on the one hand side, yes, questioning it and trying it sets yourself free, but it also is kind of reflecting on your privilege or understanding where do I stand in society, and kind of shows that if it is put into a more mainstream or a more casual way of talking about it or just doing it, then that marginalized communities that have had it or are stereotyped for having it are kind of moved away from this like shameful area, and that is sort of being an ally in a way, I guess, too, being like, I will do it too. It's
ally.
It's here for everyone. Woo!
It's also crazy looking at history and like sodomy laws, how all of these like what they would call non-hetero or like non-purity acts were put on the same pedestal, like having sex with animals, what this was on the same level as like having anal sex or having sex with a man or like non-consenting parties. So it's crazy how stupefied it was, like how simple that all of them are just evil. Just do it how we tell you to, and then you will live a godly life, I guess.
And I think in turn with that, it is also important to recognize how super dangerous it is.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, during the AIDS epidemic, of course, because it was a marginalized group, there was not as much done about it as quickly. It was not recognized as quickly. It was really reinforcing the, you're just dirty, what you're doing is wrong, and not kind of being... And this cost a lot of people their lives and has really, really taken a big toll on the queer community.
Totally. So much culture, so much people were lost. Yeah.
And it really is horrible and horrifying. So it is super important to also recognize what it means to kind of villainize a sexual practice and what effects this actually has on communities and bodies and people and stories. And it's super, super devastating.
It's such a great example how, in this case, for instance, sexual liberation is much larger than just sex or whatever you do in the bedroom. It's linked to also politically so much things. And I know that a lot of politicians are aware of that and they use that for their benefit or like their endeavors.
Yeah, I think a big part of commenting or creating shame around sexual practices is a way of keeping things as they are or reinforcing concepts that are misogynistic and patriarchal and against the LGBTQIA plus community and makes them seem unnatural. And we can see that in all types of discussions and debates going on always.
Yeah. Do you think we should do more about history?
I think we can hop on to one of the fave questions, how to prepare for it.
Okay, now coming to your questions. A question that we got a lot of times was how to prepare. So in general, there are different ways to prepare for that. Douching is one of the most well-known, where you use an enema or maybe a specific shower head for the activity. But also something that's more, I guess, of a life hack or something natural would be just eating healthy, like lots of fiber, drinking lots of water. A meatless diet also helps a lot. And a little tip for that is also fiber pills. If you don't have enough fiber in your diet, they just can help to make you more ready so that all of your stuff just gets out and you're ready to go.
Lube is your best friend. Always lube. Condoms are always a good idea. Also, if you do then use condoms for other areas, for instance, a blowjob or anything else, make sure to change it. Never use condoms you used in this region anywhere else. And also super important is to kind of sit down before and communicate. One thing I always find is a fun idea is to kind of note down different practices or way of doing it. You can start with positions or you can list the different like rimming, fisting and all note them down and then kind of have this like flag system where you say green is something I really want to try. Yellow is something I might be a bit interested in on a specific day. And red is like, I do not want to try this, and to kind of do it separately and then to come together and look at each other's lists and chat about, okay, what matches and what do we have to do to make everyone feel safe to do this? And to also make sure that you communicate your boundaries during. I know it's something we're not brought up with very well and not taught very well, but it might be awkward at first, but it makes everything so much better.
And trust, you will feel better after if you did communicate what you want. And if you're nervous, especially for your first time, as we said before, maybe do it on your own for the first time so that you know your boundaries, you know how it feels, and you go in there with much more trust in the process.
And also, what I think isn't commented on a lot is how sort of the top prepares.
Yeah.
Wash your hands very well. You do not want any extra bacteria going in there. So also make sure to shower, be clean and kind of, also, if you put your fingers there, maybe wipe them or clean them or wash them before putting them anywhere else. Really make sure that sort of the bacteria from this area don't go anywhere else. So
Yeah. It's great life advice. Just wash yourself, please.
Always works very well.
Yeah. No dirty fingernails in the butt. No.
This is also.
Yeah. And also like the length of your fingernails. Like, as we said before, it's more prone to some tears, some rips. So if you go in there with like those sharp talons, you maybe slice us up. So don't.
Yeah. cut those fingernails.
Yeah.
Cut those fingernails and clean them, and then everyone will be a bit safer.
Another question that we got is anal sex with hemorrhoids, if it's safe to do, if it's doable. In general, it can be painful. The irritation of hemorrhoids can lead to more symptoms such as bleeding and pain, especially the friction and the pressure of penetration, especially, can cause more irritation and discomfort. So these, and more little wounds in the anus can like lead to more infection and STI. So it's better in general to wait until your hemorrhoids are fully healed.
But always feel free to visit a physician or doctor about this, because it's very specific, and also how it feels for you can be very specific. So it's important to chat with an expert on it, just to make sure everything's fine and will get better. The same goes if you're experiencing diarrhea, for instance, might not be the best time to be practicing.
Yeah, and there's always tomorrow. You can do it another time. We want to avoid pain and bleeding.
Another question everyone is always very curious about is how, when you're receiving, to clean the area.
In general, it's good to clean a couple hours before the act. Like doing it right before can be stressful for anus, especially if you douche, that there's some irritation. And even in that sense, that not everything is out. So you could get some surprises. Yeah, we can talk about some ways on how to clean a bit more in depth. Like,
I feel like this is a bit body specific, right? Because some people swear on this and others on this. So I guess it's kind of a trial and error sort of thing for what works for you, what actually functions best, and also what you just feel most comfortable doing.
Totally, because in theory, anal douching is not necessary, but there are lots of people who say, I feel much more at ease or much more comfortable if I know that I did that beforehand and there's no way that anything is going to come out. And on the other side, there are people who are like, I know my body and I don't need to really prepare. I just feel when I can go for it and I go, and that works for them.
People who are in touch with their bodies. Wow.
Can you imagine?
Loving it. Okay.
One with nature. But in general, people who want to clean beforehand, I mean, some cleaning is always necessary. But in general, preparing for anal sex can just be cleaning the area with water and a gentle washcloth. It doesn't have to be like that you insert an enema or showerhead or whatever inside. But cleaning with an enema would be basically pumping water or saline into your rectum to help get out any feces. For most anal play, douching is not strictly necessary. Like natural bowel movements usually get out the stuff, especially if you're doing
penetrative sex that doesn't extend like this, like 10 centimeter insertion.
Yeah, right. Because like the poop is not stored at the end of your anus. So with natural bowel movements, it should be ready to go if you don't have any issues like diarrhea or constipation. And some doctors even say that overdouching can be a risk factor in that way, that if you're using too much water or do it too radically or too forceful, that you can disturb your gut bacteria. And
we don't want that.
We don't want that.
Yeah. Never want to disturb the bacteria while it's doing its hard working.
It can cause irritation and just basically confuse your whole system.
Okay, so if you are doing it, don't go overboard and do it all the time, and also be gentle with it.
I mean, some doctors even say to limit it to 2 or 3 times a week, that you shouldn't do it daily. But I guess it's also based on your body and based on you, how you prefer it or like what you can do.
Cool. So enjoy that douche, or don't, however you feel more comfortable. Another question a lot of people ask is how many women enjoy anal. I'm guessing this specifically then refers to cis women. And again, this very heteronormative setting where it's kind of perceived as a degrading practice or a practice that is done for tightness. And in movies, oftentimes also something women only give as a gift because their partner kind of pressures them into it.
Yeah, it seems almost like involuntarily that it's like the partner wants it, but I just do it to like please you. It's not for my pleasure.
Yeah, and I think that's why people do wonder, because in the media it is not oftentimes seen that there's a cis woman who's like, I really want to have anal sex. It's more of like, yeah, okay, it's a 10-year anniversary, I guess. Here you go.
Yeah, and if they want, it's oftentimes treated as like a joke or something like that. Or like, it's like, oh my God, she's so crazy. She's like wild.
Mm-hmm. So what we have seen is that there is an increase in numbers of people who have been doing anal throughout the last years. I guess also as we're moving away from sort of the AIDS epidemic, it is seen as something that's dangerous more and more, because also the numbers of infections have gone way, way, way down, obviously. And it seems that about 40% of people have tried anal sex and 37% of cis women have tried it. And 43% of cis men have tried it.
And also an interesting statistic is that in the last 20 years, so from like 2001 to 2022, the numbers have spiked or like gone up steadily. So in cis women, it was 28% in 2001, and in 22, it was 37% in women, cis women that tried it.
There's also a British study that was kind of conducted 90s, beginning of 2000s, and the last round was now 2012. I don't know if a new one has happened yet. And they kind of checked how many people are having anal sex, and it has more than doubled since the 90s of people who are having it. So it is kind of become more talked about, I guess, and less
taboo.
Maybe not less taboo, but less marginalized, I guess, because more people are doing it becomes more of a big practice. And also for porn categories, it's always one of the most searched.
Yeah.
Even though I would like to remind everyone that in the porn, we oftentimes don't see the preparation stage because performers are professionals and have prepared beforehand. So the fact that there, when there's anal penetration, it just happens very quickly and sort of seamlessly. It is not a depiction of reality. It is not a teaching tool for this. It is a depiction of pleasure with anal when it is done consensually. And that this is not something we are striving for in our private life, that it just hops in and everything is good, because porn is a medium. And obviously the cameras can also stop if something goes wrong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So remember, watching anal porn can be great, but do not have the wish that it will look exactly like this when you do it at home.
Yeah, realistic expectations, because porn is fantasy in the end. And I think also in that way, when there are statistics like, let's say, ooh, anal was so popular in porn searches, that also doesn't reflect acceptance necessarily, because oftentimes these, let's say, shameful again, like these shameful or like taboo practices are very exciting, even for conservative people. And then in private, they search out stuff like that, but they're not necessarily accepting.
Yes, and I guess some of the most searched porn categories are also things that are kind of fetishized in specific ways that aren't necessarily breaking the barriers of sexual liberation either. So, but yes, at least we can see that a lot of people take interest
in the practice. I think one more interesting study is that anal sex is most popular, let's say that, in Greece, according to a statistic from Bet Bible. Can you guess what the second country would be?
I would guess USA, just because it's very big.
Yeah,
you know?
True. The second country is actually Switzerland with 49%, and then Mexico also with 49%. And in fourth place, Denmark with 45.
Okay, interesting. Very, very random. Also very different parts of the world. Yeah. Okay, cool. Another question. is how dirty is it to do it spontaneously?
Yeah, I think it's it depends, like, on your life, on your body, how you do things, and also little things like, when did you poop the last time? Because as we said before, if you did it like 1 or 2 hours before, there might be a chance that it doesn't have to be dirty at all. It also depends on your diet. And also, if you just feel like, oh, actually, I gotta poop now, maybe you shouldn't do it now. If you feel constipated, stuff like that, you might end up painting.
And I think it is also important to understand that there is always a chance that something will come out and shit happens. It's okay. It really should be for both parties okay. And everyone should kind of, or all parties okay. And everyone should keep in mind that it is possible that it happens. And especially when it is spontaneous, there might be a bigger chance that something goes wrong. But then to kind of weigh out, like, is this something I'm okay with? Do I really want it right now? And if yes, then go for it.
Yeah. And maybe not being afraid of it potentially becoming dirty can also be okay, because then you don't have to, like, pull through the whole time. You can be like, oh, now it's enough. Now there's a bit too much. Now we can stop, and it can be still a fun experience.
For sure. But it also doesn't have to be something you experience. A question we also got asked is, do I have to do it?
Yeah.
And the answer is obviously no. You do not have to do anything that you don't want to do. I understand that there's sort of a pressure. It feels like everyone's had it at some point.
Yeah, you don't want to be a prude.
Yeah. You kind of want to be that. And there's also, everyone's doing it and you're told to do it and everyone says it's so fun, but if it's just not something you want to do, you don't have to do it.
Yeah, if you don't feel it, if you feel like the pressure or like the need to do it is coming from outside, or maybe even your partner, maybe it just isn't for you, or maybe not at this time, and maybe you don't want to do it at all, and you don't have to.
I think in conclusion to today's episode, we can say that we've found that anosexual practices have always existed in the queer spectrum, but also in the heterosexual spectrum, that it has been shamed through homophobic instances and through sort of the church and religious restrictions.
Yeah, it's been often used to tie it to marginalized group and to shame specific acts.
Which is why doing it can set you free and kind of bring you a whole new level of pleasure, especially if you are a prostate owner. But even if you are not, it is a sensitive area, so it can be fun for you for sure. And if you don't want to do it, do not do it. Even though it is more mainstream, that doesn't mean you have to enjoy everything that's mainstream. You just have to enjoy what you like.
Yeah. In general, it's also not tied to sexuality. So if you're wondering, I'm interested, I'm curious, I want to do it, but what does that say about me? It doesn't have to mean anything. So you're free to explore and explore yourself. It doesn't have any repercussions for your sexuality.
And also, we have given some infos on how to prepare and how to clean. But if you want to know more, as mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we have a complete masterclass on cheeks. There is the code CHEEKSYCHATS in our bio with the link, so you can try Cheeks out for 7 days for free. And their very explicit tutorials exist where they really show you how to do it and kind of take you by the hand and guide you through. And it's been a great help, because a lot of the time people explain it to you, but if you can't visualize it, for me personally, it is always a bit difficult. So we do recommend that you hop into the masterclass if you want to know more.
Yeah, so that's CHEEKSYCHATS for some more detailed guides and tutorials.
Yes, so thank you for listening and sharing our first episode with us.
Yes, it's been a pleasure.
And we will see you soon.
See you soon. Bye.